Welcome to the Latchkey Tales, Book 1, Yuki O'Malley and the Belfair, a tale of Victorian horror, written and performed for podcast by M.J. Hahn. Chapter 9, A Secret Never to be Told. Midsummer, 1885. The grand foyer was filled with a swirl of pageantry under the revolutionary glow of Whitforce's electric chandelier. No doubt impressive, yet curious, because if you inspected it closely, you would see that at the base of each brilliant bulb there was the name Golden Electrics clearly printed, a small detail that had obviously slipped by Whitforce's notice. The gala to celebrate the official completion of Coil House was a smashing success. Each and every invitation had been eagerly accepted. It seemed that the gossip and rumors around town had reached a near fever pitch. Curiosity swelled about the eccentric little lumber tycoon building a monumental castle for his mysterious and exotic bride. Anyone who was anyone had shown up to get a peek at the Oriental seer from the continent. Upstairs in the grand ballroom, Eudoxus Whitforce was in his element, doling out his specious charms to the great ladies of the city. He waltzed matron after matron deftly around the floor, making sure his card found its way into each of their possession. So far, things looked promising that more commissions would be heading his way. It didn't escape his notice that his young assistant, Desmond Derventer, also seemed to have a certain panache with the ladies. Resplendent in his rented black silk cutaway, Derventer found himself in the center of an admiring female swarm, attempting to disguise its ardor with a thrum of busily fluttering fans. Whitforce's mustache twitched and a flush of color appeared at his collar, but before he could take steps to amend this situation, he realized that he was next on the Lady of the House's dance card. He puffed up at once and clicked his heels as Mrs. Coyle approached. Her gown was made of a deep indigo-colored silk, which stood out in stark contrast with the swirl of brightly colored ball gowns around her. This also hadn't gone unnoticed. In fact, it seemed to be the general comment of most of the ladies in attendance. A bride so soon after marriage, already dressing like she was in mourning. Whitforce bowed and greeted Mrs. Coyle as the next waltz began. He immediately switched on the charm with an oily smile and a well-rehearsed anecdote. Mrs. Coyle spun with graceful precision, yet her conversation was minimal, having spotted Derventer across the floor. Whitforce continued to prattle on as they stepped and twirled through the sea of multicolored bustles. Mrs. Coyle's clandestine glances at Derventer went unnoticed, by Whitforce, at least. Milford Coyle had spent the past hour listening to a very inebriated Vernal Golden go on at length about his long list of grievances with Mr. Whitforce. Milford had briefly emerged from a haze of Irish whiskey, long enough to observe his lovely bride making eyes at Whitforce's other assistant. His whiskey-soaked wits convinced him what he saw couldn't possibly be true. So he poured out two more shots and turned his attention back to Golden, who was still complaining about something to do with Whitforce's name being first on the tea maker. A waltzing Eudoxus Whitforce was jolted out of his amusing recitation by a tap on his shoulder. Before he could sputter out any protest about being cut in on, he realized his dancing partner had vanished. Mrs. Coyle smiled at the expression on Whitforce's reddening face as she was whisked away across the floor.
That man is a buffoon.
Well, I certainly won't argue with you there.
Mrs. Coyle looked up at Derventer and smiled.
Even as we approach the end of this century, the miserable sycophant still lives in the past. He belongs in the past.
Derventer looked at her thoughtfully as she continued.
What he does not understand is that here at the edge of the world, the conventions do not apply. There are no titles to fawn over, no scandals to hide away from. We've arrived in a glorious savage wilderness, and I do believe he hasn't the claws for it.
They gracefully circled around the floor, causing a wake of sudden and not-so-subtle whispering behind many fans. The unattended ladies which lined the perimeter of the dance floor looked on enviously as Derventor spun his partner smoothly around.
You seem to have made a favorable impression.
Mrs. Coyle glanced at the row of souring wallflowers, and Derventor rolled his eyes.
Well, sadly, it seems to be a sizable part of the job.
Derventor's eyes fell upon the whip force as he joined the group of ladies with an exaggerated flourish.
And some people are deluded enough to believe that they do their jobs well.
Meanwhile, as the festivities progressed, Vernal Golden finally sipped his whiskey, having ceased his tirade about his less-than-satisfactory partnership with Whipforce. He had finally arrived at the topic of getting a valuable reference from Milford Coyle, but before he could plead his case, he faltered. His plans for striking out on his own would have to wait. Coyle sat with his chin sunken into his chest. The sonorous ring of whiskey-scented snores announced that Vernal Golden's meeting was adjourned. Golden downed the remaining liquor in his glass, winced and staggered to his feet. The crowd had waned a bit as the evening wore on. The orchestra continued to play, and a handful of couples were still persistently waltzing. It was then that, through the thinning crowd, Golden observed his hostess leaving the dance floor with Derventor. Thinking this somewhat curious, he followed them, circling the ballroom completely disregarded by any of the remaining ladies and gentlemen. Golden watched Derventor and Mrs. Coyle descend the winding staircase and stop on the landing under the archway which led to the conservatory. There they were greeted by a strange pair of gentlemen. Golden recoiled and shrank back. It was Dermal and Femur, Mrs. Coyle's solicitors. They had arrived on the final day of construction, skulking around the place, appearing suddenly in doorways with their fountain pens scratching in their little notebooks. At first glance, one might have mistaken them for undertakers, an odd pair of crows dressed in slim black trousers and tails with black waistcoats and cravats, their mutual chatter punctuated with droll little giggles. Generally, they gave Golden the willies. Luckily, due to his natural talent for remaining inconspicuous, Vernal was able to slowly approach, step by step, until he was in earshot. He watched Mrs. Coyle greet the pair of lawyers with a little nod and introduce them to Derventor.
I don't believe we've been formally introduced. May I present Cassius Dermal and Austin Femur, solicitors extraordinaire. This is Mr. Desmond Derventor, an enterprising young gentleman that I'm sure it will be your pleasure to know.
Dermal and Femur shook Derventor's hand, and Mrs. Coyle smiled.
If you ever find yourself in a litigious situation, their services can be miraculous. They certainly have proved most effective for myself.
Femur arched a thin eyebrow, and Dermal piped up at once.
Oh, my dear. Remember that spot of bother with the Habsburgs in Vienna? The tiresome little Archduke accidentally wandering off the roof of the Hofburg?
Oh, my dear, it very nearly took everything we had to keep that piddling escapade quiet.
Derventor's eyes sparkled.
I see. I'll bear that in mind, should I ever find myself in a similar situation.
Derventor observed that a few others had collected around them. The peculiar pair of widows, Mrs. Carstairs and Mrs. Bilsey, clung to the banister while keeping Mrs. Coyle firmly in their sights. The flamboyant artist and sculptor known simply as Santorini had appeared from the conservatory. He bowed to Mrs. Coyle and joined the party. Further up the stairs, with her back to the light, loomed the recondite Mrs. Battery. Mrs. Coyle smiled to all and descended the remaining stairs, her following in tow. She stopped in the center of the great room. There, the expanding circle was joined by the venerable and slightly doddering Lord and Lady Dashwood, as well as retired Judge Hexam Greaves and his rather nervous assistant, Mr. Skittery. While Milford Coyle snored away, the gala reached its close. Unfazed by her husband's absence, Mrs. Coyle deftly bidded her guests a pleasant evening as they departed. The exiting guests shot discreet glances at the collection of characters that lingered around their hostess. Then, just as quickly, they resumed their smiling decorum and made their goodbyes. Derventor chuckled to himself, overhearing the tide of retreating bustles whispering about their brazen hostess, as well as their uncouth and somewhat less than temperate host. Eventually, Mr. Whipforce descended the stairs. he failed to disguise his astonishment at the Lady of the House's choice of company. Derventor, as well as the majority of the wealthiest prospects he had been attempting to charm all evening. When Mrs. Coyle offered a decidedly firm goodnight, Whipforce sputtered at the effrontery, while simultaneously noticing that no one in the remaining party was making eye contact. Nobody was offering a lifeline. Whipforce puffed up and walked stiffly away with his mustache twitching. Mrs. Coyle found herself in the center of the group that had lingered after the rest of the party guests had withdrawn. And this, of course, was her intention. She smiled at the small congregation. Then she noticed Mr. Golden awkwardly standing on the stairwell above.
Ah, Vernal, won't you join us? I think what I have to say might interest you as well.
All eyes were on Vernal Golden as he descended the stairs. Mrs. Coyle reached out her hand.
Mr. Golden is the unsung genius who not only has illuminated my ballroom with his amazing AC current, but he has also made a splendid home for my precious baby.
Eyes in the small crowd flickered.
And it is only right that he be witness to the miracle that he has helped make feel so at home.
There was a smattering of awkward applause, and Mrs. Coyle turned and led the way across the room. Derventor and Golden's eyes met with a perplexed look when they each realized where she was going. Mrs. Coyle was guiding the procession down to the bathing chamber. The tiled room had been lit with hundreds of candles. A great banner had been strung from the vaulted ceiling high above. The image of the Ouroboros, an enormous circular snake engulfing its tail, swayed over the pool of tea. Derventor counted 11 heads in addition to himself and Mrs. Coyle. He saw that the large tank had been removed. Then, with a shudder, Derventor discerned something stir just beneath the tea pool's surface. Mrs. Coyle stood next to a small podium that was draped in black velvet. 12 silver flasks, each emblazoned with the Ouroboros, had been carefully arranged into a circle. They lay twinkling in the flickering candlelight.
To all of you who join me here on this most auspicious occasion, I bid you welcome.
The group remained silent, hanging on Mrs. Coyle's every word.
I have invited you here tonight because each of you possess exceptional qualities. You all stand out like radiant stars against the gloom of mediocrity that pervades our century. It is essential that each of you be able to ferry these talents and gifts into the future. No one present need be swallowed up by the inevitable. Tonight, I will offer you an alternative that will allow you to take a stand against the crushing progression of time. You will all become eternal beacons, undying lights in the darkness.
Derventor peered around the room. The attendees continued to stare, glassy-eyed and enraptured. He saw that even Vernal Golden was transfixed. Mrs. Coyle picked up one of the silver flasks and kneeled down to the pool. She unscrewed the flask's tiny stopper and filled it with the swirling tea. Again, Derventor saw that churning dark shape circling the pool's heart. Mrs. Coyle lifted the flask above her head.
The sacred tea! Elixir vitae, the great panacea. The hands of time are never idle, but with one sip, one small measure per day is enough to halt their cruel business indefinitely.
There were audible gasps from the assembly.
But that is only the prologue to the true miracle, and the miracle is a secret. A secret never to be told.
Mrs. Coyle gestured to the closest attendant. A rather timid Mrs. Carstairs ambled closer to the pool. Mrs. Coyle clicked her tongue and held her hand over the pool's surface. A tingle ran down Derventor's spine when he saw the hulking shape rise up to meet Mrs. Coyle's fingertips. It quivered and mewled under her touch, its milky pink skin gleaming in the dim light.
Will you keep the secret?
Mrs. Carstairs nodded frantically. And then Mrs. Coyle produced a small silver knife. She nimbly made a quick circular incision into the thing's hide. She peeled away a thin disc of skin and held it gingerly as the creature sank back beneath the pool's surface. She reached out and grabbed Mrs. Carstairs' withered arm, pulling her in close. Mrs. Carstairs sputtered as her gnarled and liver-spotted hand was enfolded in the thin membrane. The glistening skin remained only for a moment before dissolving away. The hand that was revealed was that of a much younger woman. Mrs. Carstairs jumped to her feet, her eyes wide with amazement. She held her new hand aloft for all to see. Gasps of astonishment became a resounding chorus of approval and applause. With a stunned expression, Derventer watched Mrs. Coyle triumphantly return to her feet. She threw her head back and opened her arms wide under the banner of the circular snake. Her voice rang out, and all eyes fell upon her.
All hail the rebirth of the Ouroboros!
Vita Eternus Soboroboros!
The group answered her in turn, chanting over and over again, their voices echoing off of the tiled walls of the chamber. Vita Eternus Soboroboros. The words fell from Yuki's lips as she stood in the shower. The water cascaded over her head, washing away the images of the odd assembly. It had happened again. Another strange dream. Or maybe it was something else. A vision? A hallucination? What else do you call dreams that happen when you're awake? Yuki was sure the doctor would know the precise clinical term. Yuki turned off the water, stepped out of the shower, and dried herself off. She slid her hand across the steamy, fogged-over mirror above the sink and looked at herself. Vita Eternus. Yuki tried to remember the rest. The vision was already fading. Vague and murky images of a huge party clumsily swirled in her mind. The crowd of old-fashioned tuxedos and ball gowns dimmed. Yuki thought she could still feel the crush of a phantom corset around her middle. And then with a start, she remembered she had been dancing with Derventer.
Blech.
Yuki toweled off her hair and returned to her room. The rain had passed the night before. The view through her window showed nothing but a bright, blue, optimistic morning sky, dotted with a few white puffy clouds for emphasis. Once Yuki was dressed, she sat on her bed staring at her phone.
Who to call?
The question persisted, with sadly few options. Then Yuki gasped. She looked around and frowned. The black cardigan sweater was still on the floor where she had thrown it, but Crowley's leather jacket was nowhere to be seen. Then she remembered. She had left it in the supply room downstairs. Yuki also remembered she hadn't really finished her first day at work with a cheerful, "See you tomorrow." Mrs. Flack had been fired, or did she quit? Either way, Yuki dreaded the thought of having to sneak back downstairs to the Belfair to retrieve Crowley's jacket. And Tina? What about Tina? She had puffed up and exploded after Derventer shot her. Can you murder the dead? Yuki sat perplexed.
So what am I supposed to do now?
For once, there was nobody around to tell her what to do. She knew she ought to call the doctor, but cringed at the notion. The last thing she needed to hear was that the calamity the previous day had been her fault because she wasn't trying hard enough to follow instructions and have fun.
I followed instructions and minded Mrs. Flack, and look where that got me. Nobody exactly had any fun.
Yuki had to admit she enjoyed the idea of being orphaned. Temporarily, at least. Days filled with doing whatever she pleased, not having to take orders from anyone. She could wheel around the city wherever she wanted. Yuki looked out her window, down across the street at the cafe. She opened her phone and dialed.
Hello?
Hi, Crowley.
Hey, I'm glad you called. I was gonna call you. Things have been a little crazy over here.
Well, you could say it's been a little crazy over here as well.
Uh-oh. That's really saying something considering where you live. What's going on? Are you okay?
Oh, sure, I guess. Tina went on a rampage yesterday.
What? Tina? For real? So the crystal worked then?
Yeah, you could say that.
Yuki realized her stomach was grumbling. She turned and headed for the kitchen.
That doesn't sound good. So, come on. What happened?
A rocketing tea trolley, a broken chandelier, crazy old lady screaming and running around everywhere. Just another day at the office.
Whoa!
Yeah, Tina doesn't mess around. But then Derventer shot her with this big silver pistol, and she sort of popped.
A silver pistol?
And then he had a total mental fit and fired Mrs. Flack.
Really? Mrs. Flack's gone? Huh. What about your mom? Is she around?
Yeah, right. She's had to fly off to Japan for work, so it's just me now. Great, huh?
Yuki reached the central hall and appraised the double doors. At some point, she was going to have a proper look behind them. Crowley suddenly sounded concerned.
You know, the cops were around earlier asking about Daisy Von Bruin. Rosie keeps saying she disappeared when they were walking past your corner. You know where all the construction guys were digging? Rosie swears that something reached up and snatched Daisy away. Everybody's talking about how the curse castle is struck again. I called my dad about Tina anyway, but now he's really got a good excuse to go poke around over there.
Something nudged at Yuki's memory. Something plastic and shiny she had seen by the broken tiles in that strange chamber far below.
The yellow visor.
Just as she said it, Yuki was surprised that she caught the unmistakable aroma of bacon and eggs drifting in from the direction of the kitchen. Crowley was still talking in her ear.
Wait, what was that you said about a visor? Yuki? Hello?
Crowley's voice buzzed in her ear as she walked down the corridor. To her amazement, Yuki found Mrs. Flack busily at work in the kitchen cooking breakfast.
I'll have to call you back, okay?
Yuki, wait. Yuki? What did you say about the visor?
Well, there you are. Good morning. I thought I'd let you sleep in for a change. Here, I made you some breakfast.
Mrs. Flack stood in the kitchen, piling mounds of scrambled eggs onto a plate, which she set on the counter for Yuki. Far from being dressed in her usual head-to-toe black, today Mrs. Flack's outfit was ablaze with color. Her hair looked lighter and had broken free of its severe side part, now falling soft and wavy around her ears. Yuki was amazed at the transformation, but didn't mention it.
Hello? Didn't you quit?
What? Oh, that? Well, yes, as far as that rat Derventer is concerned. But we're not worrying about him right now. I promised your mother I'd keep an eye on you while she's gone. So, here I am.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. Well, have a seat and eat something. The bacon will be ready in just a minute.
Yuki took a seat behind the counter. Mrs. Flex's scrambled eggs actually smelled pretty good. Yuki took a bite and chewed approvingly. While Mrs. Flack continued to busy herself, Yuki noticed that the living room furniture had been unpacked and arranged. She had to admit it, the room looked really good. Then a thought occurred to her. Earlier, she had failed to register that someone had cleaned her bedroom floor and cleared away the broken bits of ceiling plaster. And was it just her imagination, or had someone also dusted and polished the ladder that was hanging from the ceiling? Yuki wondered if Mrs. Flack had dusted her while she was sleeping. Mrs. Flack turned with a broad smile and shoveled several strips of crispy bacon onto Yuki's plate. Clearly, Mrs. Flack was in her element.
So are you okay? There was a lot of activity yesterday.
Activity? Yeah, that's one way to put it.
I'm not quite sure what happened after the trolley slipped.
That was Tina.
Who?
Tina the house ghost. She's the one who dropped a chandelier on you.
House ghost? Oh, Yuki, what an imagination. That chandelier was just old. It should have been fixed ages ago.
Yuki was almost positive that Mrs. Flack had seen Tina, but she didn't exactly feel like arguing, so she sat quietly and munched on her bacon.
Well, anyway, I brought this back upstairs for you.
Mrs. Flack was holding a beat-up leather jacket. Yuki brightened at the sight of the painted flaming skulls.
Oh yeah, I was looking for that. Thanks.
Yeah, Joe's been kind enough to pack up my things. He's quitting as well, you know, as a show of solidarity. We'll all have to hash it out together once your mother gets back.
Mrs. Flack's smile faded.
I don't know, though. I left her several messages, and then when she finally answered her phone, she said she was on her way to a meeting, and we couldn't talk.
Yuki couldn't help rolling her eyes.
So I told her what happened, but all she said was how busy she was, and that now she wasn't sure when she'd be able to come back.
Yuki thought that sounded strange. She knew it was impossible for the doctor to operate without a detailed itinerary at all times.
But in the meantime, we're not going to worry about that.
Mrs. Flack fanned out an array of colorful brochures. Yuki glanced over some of the finest tourist traps San Francisco has to offer.
I've got my car parked right outside. What do you say we play tourist today and do some sightseeing? It'll be our little secret. Don't you think that sounds like fun?
Mrs. Flack beamed, and Yuki looked doubtful. thinking that maybe she'd already had a little too much fun. A disheveled Audra Lamal walked in through the Belfair sliding glass doors. She looked a little wilted, and one of her eyebrows drooped a bit. Clearly she hadn't had a chance to adjust her face during her long journey home from Reno. She was shocked at the disarray. Overturned furniture, an upset tea trolley, teacups and spoiled pastries scattered everywhere. Not to mention the shattered chandelier that had buried the reception counter. Lamal arched her unfettered eyebrow and dragged her luggage along behind her. The little wheels crunched over the broken chandelier crystals as she headed towards Derventer's studio.
Knock, knock. Anybody home?
She passed through the swinging double doors to find Derventer at work behind a microscope.
Had a busy few days, I see. I love what you've done with the place.
She dropped her luggage as Derventer looked up. His labored expression was replaced by a flicker of a smirk at Lamal's slovenliness.
Yes, it's been nothing short of a fiasco. You certainly missed it, my dear. I finally fired Flack, and Halliday is leaving as well. But that's fine. No more prying eyes to maneuver around. The real news is that our old friend Miss Bleeberman popped round for a visit. You've already seen the results.
If Lamal's face could still register astonishment, it would have gaped.
Madala, not her again. I thought you and the old lady had sorted her out and locked her away. Yes, well, that's what we all thought. Not to worry. She's gone for good this time.
Derventer went back to his microscope.
And what about you, my dear? You're in quite a state. Did the centenarian prove to be more of a challenge than you expected?
Lamal almost managed to sneer.
Ugh, don't get me started. His assets weren't quite as liquid as I would have preferred. There was some difficulty collecting my compensation. Steps had to be taken. So you gave him the old eyeful and robbed him blind? Then hung him out to dry, drooling gibberish in the middle of the Nevada desert, I expect. No. The Donner Pass is lovely this time of year. I'm sure he will wander down the little mountain eventually.
Lamal observed that Derventer had rearranged things around his studio. The enormous black metal cylinder had been moved to the side and shrouded with a cloth. Several work tables now sat in the center of the room. Derventer was at work at the largest of these. He had several petri dishes fanned out around him. A rather large and formidable syringe was poised at the end of the table. Derventer filed through a rack of test tubes that looked like they contained blood. He selected one and carefully measured out a few drops onto one of the dishes. He turned to examine it under the microscope. Her interest piqued. Lamal moved closer.
So you're playing with your chemistry set again. Whatever are you up to, ma chère?
She scanned over the petri dishes, and again, save for the one mobile eyebrow, if her face could register emotion, it would have surely looked amazed. Each dish held a small square sample of thin, glistening skin. Lamal looked closer, and the golden fire in her eyes flickered. She knew immediately what that strange opalescent sheen glimmering from the petri dishes meant.
Don't tell me. You've managed it? It's actually back?
Derventer looked up from his microscope with a sly smile.
Naturally, it's back. What did I tell you? The baby is back in its bath, this time under lock and key.
Lamal's gaze lingered on the enormous syringe.
How lovely. So, what's with the hypo? You know how I feel about needles.
Derventer snickered while he got his sample into focus.
Yes, my dear. You're such a delicate flower. And screwdrivers? Not getting squeamish with those as well, I hope.
Lamal shook her head while fiddling under her wig with a long purple talon in a vain attempt to secure her sagging eyebrow. Derventer continued to focus. Then, suddenly, with a grunt of frustration, he removed the petri dish from the microscope. He placed it aside with a frown. Lamal saw that the skin sample had become black and shriveled.
Damn, another rejection. Ugh. Yeah, now what? Well, you've got to keep the blasted thing happy or it's useless. Iwanaga just had the touch. It used to purr when she was around. I've been filling it full of happy drugs.
It's docile enough, but it's just not the same. It just doesn't like me. I suppose it never has.
That sounds potentially problematic.
Still, though, there is a bright side. Here, my dear, I've already taken the liberty.
Derventor reached into a drawer and retrieved a silver flask which he handed to Lamal. Her eyes met the flask with an uncertain look.
Oh, it's all right. I've already tried it. It tastes just the same.
Lamal took the flask, unscrewed the stopper, and recoiled at the smell.
You're right. Peace vinegar. Just like old times.
She raised the flask in salute and took a swig.
Vita eternus saboravorus.
Lamal wiped her chin and nodded.
Indeed. But what about his skin? Can you get that to work as well?
Well, like you said, potentially problematic. It did seem to respond to little Yuki. It came right to her. I do believe she's inherited at least some of her grandmother's gifts. So we'll just have to keep her close at hand to keep the baby happy.
Lamal suddenly looked doubtful.
So it's not a problem that I just saw the brat being loaded into Flack's ridiculous clown car?
She what?
Oui. As I was coming in, they were driving off.
Derventor appeared concerned, his eyebrows knitted together.
Blast! Confound that woman! What's she playing at? What about Ame? Call her and tell her that Flack woman has run off with her daughter.
Well, that's not part of the plan, you see. Kogiyama Corporation's lawyers have already been kind enough to delay Ame's return indefinitely. Courtesy of Domal and Fema, that is. Plus, we don't want Ame snooping around. I'm not sure she'd be on board with my future plans.
So what now?
While the pair plotted their next move, there was a surprising and insistent beeping from the reception counter. The sound echoed across the foyer and found its way into the studio. Derventor and Lamal looked at each other.
You're not expecting anyone, are you?
Derventor rolled his chair over to the row of monitors perched on the wall. One showed a small group of men standing outside the large iron gate. Derventor squinted at the monitor, trying to focus on one figure in particular. He looked perplexed.
No, it couldn't be.
Derventor turned to Lamal with a smile.
Well, my dear, it seems that the police have arrived.
Lamal's golden eyes popped.
And on top of that, it looks like our old friend Detective Golden has returned for another visit.
The golden flames in her eyes blazed.
I do hope you're all warmed up. We may need one of your king-sized whammies for this, my dear.
So, Chapter 9 comes to a close. I'd like to thank special guest voices on this episode, Tawny Tackett as Lady Iwanaga, Jennifer Viale as Mrs. Flack, and Leanne Parker as Yuki. Music on the program provided by freesound.org and incomptech.com. For more information, please check out the Latchkey Tales fan page on Facebook. Please stay tuned for Chapter 10, and until then, this is MJ Han saying goodbye for now. And thanks for listening.
Well, have a seat and eat something. The bacon will be ready in a minute.
So bad.
I was like, I've got my par carked. That's what I was saying.